From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 24th day of August, 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kirk Kimmel at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Todd Hubbs will be here, agricultural economist from the University of Illinois, to discuss the corn market fundamentals, both supply and demand. And then as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Mark Russo at Brist Pulse and discuss the cash grain situation with Greg Johnson from the Andersons, all on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn today up 4 3/4, settled at 331 3/4. December 345, 4.5 higher in May futures, 364 1/4, up 3 3/4. November beans at 905 3/4, up 1. January a penny and 3/4 higher, 913 the settlement price. Bean oil futures up 25 cents, the bean meal down 1.10. Wheat futures July soft red, 1 lower at 541 3/4, and the hard red July at 472 1/4, down 10 1/4 cents. Live cattle futures in the October 62.5 lower at 107.92.5. September feeders down $2 at 142.85. And lean hogs in the October up 35 cents at $54.60. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Good Monday afternoon to you, Kurt. What happened in Chicago today?
Well, once again, we're on a roll. We got a higher Monday. And man, we'll keep these things rolling here if we can. But corn up 4, 4.5, beans up 1, 1.5, and wheat down about 6. I think it's some spread activity, buying back some short corn, laying on some short wheat. When you look at the players, what their goal and objective is, the commodity funds are big players, but two, they're not completely exposed, so they do some spread activity to have a covered position. But corn was real impressive. Follow through, you know, technically and fundamentally. Fundamentally, you know, the pro forma crop tour shed a little light that maybe the crop's not quite as big as what the trade was led to believe. You can come in and lower the Iowa harvested acres some, and the national spotlight lower some of those harvested acres too. Then if you take a little yield off on some hot, dry weather and some wind damage, all of a sudden we're probably looking at a situation where we've seen maybe the high here on the yield prospects, especially if the rain stays to the southern half of the U.S. here as we go through the week, according to what the forecast shows. But impressive day. Started the overnight session kind of sloppy. Then we firmed up towards the tail end of the day. FD's corn closing at 345. The significance of this 345 area is we're up against last week's highs. And if we would see the crop conditions report here this afternoon show some deterioration of more than 3 to 5%, that would put the corn market in a position maybe to gap above last week's high there at this 346 level. If that's the case, and we would maintain that higher gap open, that sets the stage here of an island bottom here on the corn chart for the December futures. And also, too, we've carved out a potential head and shoulders bottom here over the last 30 days in the December corn chart. So that would be quite impressive if we could do that and maintain that. But last week we saw an island bottom in the July corn futures, and the market came back and kind of filled that gap there. But July corn is in a position, too, to try to march higher just like the December is. The key, though, is this afternoon's conditions report. It will probably give the market some signals tonight, and I think tonight's grain opening will be watched more closely than what the Republican National Convention will be watched to tonight, Todd.
Well, that could be true. You know, 100 million here and 100 million there, and pretty soon we'll add up to some real impact in the marketplace. However, not yet. Is there anything farmers need to do while we've got a rally in place?
Well, I think it's an opportunity to make some catch-up sales in through here, kind of keep pushing a little out the door as we go. The number one advice that we've been looking at here over the last couple weeks is, you know, big cry, small cry, why worry about it? You know, put a price floor in and kind of let things run here for you. We still like the December 340 corn puts, the November $9 bean puts. Then, you know, if you're short on bushels, you don't oversell. If you got extra bushels, at least you got those price. It gives you a ton of flexibility in through here until we get to the September monthly supply demand report and get a little better handle on where we are on production as a whole. So there's some creative things out there you can do to kind of manage some of this risk here as we move forward.
And thanks so much.
Very good.
That's Kurt Kimmel. He is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. On this Monday, let's check in with Todd Hubbs, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus at the University of Illinois. He's penned another article for the Farm Doc Daily website. You can find it there now, in fact, at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Look for the article entitled Looking at 2020-21 Corn Consumption. Thanks, Todd, for taking time with us today. So, you went through all the fundamentals of the corn crop and incorporated the derecho and the drought and Iowa expectations for total production and then the corn demand as well. What are the most important changes that you think have been made in the last month or so?
It seems to me, Todd, that the corn market's already incorporated some of the production shortfall that we might be seeing. And I think a lot of folks out there think the rally maybe should be stronger, and that's why I was sort of focusing on 2021 corn consumption today. Because when you look at USDA's projections, to me, they're in the high end of the set of possibilities for consumption in 2021 based on the economic conditions we're in right now. And I would love if it came off and we saw even more corn consumption, but I think to get corn consumption at that level, it implies low corn prices, both for exports and a lot of the domestic consumption level. So for me, none of the real changes in the 2021 crop, that, you know, they creeped up feed and residual a little bit as they changed this year. They've moved up exports a little bit. At this point, it's a big old crapshoot, in my opinion, about where those are going to be at the end of next marketing year. But when you sit down and look at just use in total, you know, they're projecting 14.775 billion bushels of use. And that's up over a billion bushels from the present marketing year. So to do that kind of use, you know, we're going to need really strong feed use, which is feasible. You know, we saw the cattle on feed report come out last Friday. There's a lot of placement. There's a lot of hogs out there. Will that continue all through 21? That's a big question, considering where the prices have been over the last couple of months. And they've got exports at well over 2.2 billion bushels. That sounds like it's feasible. Prices stay low, but we don't want prices low. We don't want them down there. And there's been a lot of discussion recently about, you know, changing fortunes, the dollar helping exports. But when you look at some of our main competitors, like Brazil and Argentina, since the turn of the year, they're still down. Brazil's real is down 39% against the dollar. The peso is down 23%, even though they strengthened a little bit recently. So if they have big crops, which it looks like they're on the books for, they're going to be really strong competitors in 2021. So while we have seen strong export sales recently for the next marketing year, I mean, we're off to a great start. You know, about 250 million bushels less of China. They're rapidly coming up on their tariff rate quota. They may expand that because it looks like they may be short some corn, but who knows, right? And the other issue is ethanol. Corn use for ethanol is always a worry for me these days, and they've got it at 5.2 billion bushels. We're sort of sitting a little over, almost 10% down on ethanol production from where it would typically be this time of year. And that looks like it's going to continue for a while because gasoline demand's flattened out. And we've seen ethanol exports be below last year's pace, you know, due to coronavirus, and Brazil's cut out a lot of imports, and there's talks about policy about their tariffs on ethanol, and they've got their own domestic production, and they've got issues politically and, you know, disease in Brazil. So it feels like that's the high end of the possibility set. I think to get there, it implies very low corn prices. And so for me, I think when we see these rallies around these weather events, and it's very easy to get carried away with how much supply we're going to use, blues. But even if we lost 500 million bushels off of supply, which is half a billion bushels, we'd still be carrying out in 2021 what we're carrying out this year. And that's a half a billion bushels. So I think it's just important to keep all that in mind when you're thinking about corn marketing the new crop this year. I'm hopeful we get some kind of vaccine. I'm hopeful it works and people adopt it and we get economic activity back to levels, you know, pre-coronavirus. But that looks like it may be out in the distance a ways, and it's going to affect corn consumption.
Scale up selling for farmers in that case?
I would wait and see how this, if we get a little bit of weather market rally. We've seen it up a little bit today, but yeah, a little bit of scaling I think might be a good idea.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it. And one last thing. I know that you're moving on to Kansas City and ERS, the Economic Research Service of the United States Department of Agriculture, and that'll be the last time that we get a chance to talk with you as ag economist at the University of Illinois. Over the last 4 years, I have really enjoyed our conversations and the work you've done. I appreciate it much, and I know the listeners and the agricultural community across Illinois and the Midwest have as well.
Well, I appreciate that, Todd. You know, I've enjoyed my time in Illinois, and this was just a good opportunity for me, and I think I got a lot to give there. And I wish, you know, farmers know my best. I hope they have success in marketing this year. It's a tough one.
It is going to be a tough one. Hey, thank you so much. That, of course, is Todd Hubbs, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. On this Monday, let's check the weather forecast with Mark Russo at Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. Hey, Mark, thanks so much for being with us today. You had a busy Monday, started off with your storm mode webinars, and I wrote on Twitter because I think this is true. Every meteorologist I know goes into storm mode when there's weather that is going to inflict damage or pain on either people or property or both. And I got it. I got the whole storm mode title to it. So I know you and John Davis were working hard on that. And if people want to know more about that, they can, I guess they probably can just go to riskpulse.com. And I assume it's there somewhere where they can sign up for those webinars, because you're going to do it again tomorrow, right? And we're talking about Marco and Laura, and we're going to do that right now too. So let's start there. First, can they sign up for the webinar online at riskpulse.com?
Yes, Todd. For listeners here, just go to riskpulse.com and you can register for our storm mode webinar, which again will be daily until the threats have been alleviated, which might be Thursday at the earliest, but yeah, much of this week. And then you can also learn more about Risk Pulse and to subscribe to our Sunrise application. Yeah, you can learn more on our website.
All right. So since we're promoting stuff, because I'll have a webinar on Tuesday as well, I'll be moderating one of the Farm Doc Daily webinars. This one on farmland prices, we've talked about it a couple of times already. That's at 11 o'clock tomorrow. So those who want to come into that webinar can look at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu and look for the webinars link. You'll find it and get started. We'll talk about farmland tomorrow. Now, let's do talk about Marco to begin with and Laura. This is doesn't happen very often. I think you guys said twice in the last, recorded time that we've had a couple come into the United States, the Gulf of Mexico, at the same time. So this is a very rare occasion.
Yeah, this is certainly one for the record books. I guess it could even be more impressive if we had two hurricanes in the Gulf of Mexico simultaneously. That's never occurred. But the fact that we have Tropical Storm Marco right now, and then also, Tropical Storm Laura, which will become Hurricane Laura in the Gulf of Mexico either tomorrow or Wednesday. Then it's only happened. We had two named storms in the Gulf of Mexico simultaneously in the past 100 plus years, which makes this a very unique situation. And also the area of impact is going to be pretty close, if not the same area, which also makes the situation unique since it's the impacts are happening in just a few days of one another.
Yeah, so they're going to happen within that region from what, New Orleans to Houston or thereabouts, and depending on which one you're talking about, it either come in closer to New Orleans or closer to, well, in between the two, I guess, with Laura. And the tracks are entirely different, but they will impact crops in the Delta region, which stretches from southern Illinois all the way to southeastern Louisiana. What do you see in the way of an impact?
Yeah, well, I guess first off for Marco is the smallest threat here. As the storm continues to weaken and likely will become a remnant low and dissipate about 48 hours from now. The bigger concern is with Laura. And especially for agriculture and the Delta region, depending on the exact track of Laura here, at least of all the U.S. crop belt, that's the main crop belt to be likely impacted to some extent. Right now, based on the current track of Laura, we do anticipate landfall coming up later on Wednesday night or very early Thursday morning in southwest Louisiana or far southeast Texas. And with that, some of the core wind and higher rainfall totals will be in the Delta, especially the kind of western half of the Delta. And so that is at least the zone of higher risk with potential issues. I guess right now it doesn't look like a direct hit, but that still is in the realm of possibilities, and we'll come down to the exact track of Laura making landfall here in the middle part of this week.
Yeah, so I was taking a look at what the predicted track appears to be and is often the case, moving northward through Arkansas, and then once you get to along the Mississippi River, relatively speaking, and once you get to the Ohio River Valley, they tend to make a hard right, and this one does. Does that mean that Tennessee, Kentucky, southern Illinois, parts of southern Indiana, Ohio will get rainfall? Missouri, too, I suppose.
Yeah, it's certainly looking like the most likely situation here, especially, well, southeast Missouri and into the Boot Heel, far southern Illinois and Indiana with the acreage around the Ohio River Valley. And so it does look like some improvement in rainfall there, not expecting any kind of tremendous rainfall or flooding within that zone. If anything, it's a net beneficial situation because of some of the drier conditions here in August. I guess ideally, you'd like to see those rains from Laura rather than make a hard right. You'd like to see the rain track further to the north and impact the drier areas of central northern Illinois, and then especially in Iowa. Iowa just continues to be the driest part of the ag belt here recently, especially in August. And at this time, at least it does look for this week, the rains from Laura will stay well removed from Iowa.
Is it because there's a blocking high that turns the storm someplace, or what is it that causes the turn?
Yeah, I guess two reasons here, one of which is the Bermuda high and the western extent that's going to be eroding here over the next couple of days, allowing the storm to take a more northwest track, and then ultimately when it weakens further and combines with this trough of low pressure moving into the north central U.S., that's what allows it to make a harder right. You have stronger upper level winds. Those stronger winds are stronger steering currents, and that helps to really change the track in a pretty abrupt time frame.
So the bulk of the Midwest remains dry for the next week?
Yeah, and even it looks drier compared to how things ended late last week. I guess looking out beyond the next week, that is the next main window of opportunity for more widespread rains across the Midwest. And so, especially for the driest acreage, it's really the first week of September is that primary window of opportunity for rain activity.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Mark Russo, of course, is with Risk Pulse from Chicago, Illinois. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org. We're now joined by Greg Johnson. He's at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County to discuss the agricultural cash grain market. Hey, good afternoon to you, Greg. Thanks for being with us today.
Oh, good afternoon, Todd.
Now, tell me about basis in East Central Illinois.
Basis here in East Central Illinois is still steady. Corn is basically the same price for old crop or new crop. We're starting to see some quick shipment bids in some of the areas that were impacted by the storm a few weeks ago. North Central Illinois, East Central Iowa, we're seeing quick shipment bids there for corn. So it sounds to me like there's a need for some quick shipment corn in places. But right here in East Central Illinois, old crop and new crop corn are basically one and the same.
So do you think derecho changed basis very much? Because now there is there are quick shipments because of lack of bin space and some just logistics in that area. Because I was of the mind that most of you were considering basis might fade at the end of this month pretty hard, even if futures were to stay steady or go up.
Well, as much storage space as was lost from that derecho, it sounds like there was even more supply loss. So it sounds like there's still going to be plenty of room for basis this fall, even in Iowa, just because the crop size is going to be so much smaller. So smaller supply should translate into a better basis. And I guess that's what we're seeing, at least here in the short run in Iowa, North Central Illinois.
But not really higher prices.
Not yet. I think the trade is looking at the demand side of the equation being a little lackluster due to the COVID, due to the reduced ethanol usage. So even though the Iowa crop could be lower than what may be traded right now, it feels like maybe the traders have that opinion that let's just get harvest going and then we'll see how bad it really is, see if it's a smaller, bigger, or what we're kind of imagining it is right now. But we may have to get into harvest before we really find out how much corn really was lost in Iowa.
Think you have much corn yet to buy before next Monday?
We were 10% a week ago. I think we're probably down to 5%. I don't get the impression that farmers want to hold on to that and pay another round of storage charges. So I think that last 5% will get moved between now and the end of the month.
Anything on soybeans for the day?
Well, soybeans, we're not buying as many. There is a quick shipment premium. There's an inverse between old crop and new crop. That could continue for some time. Farmers don't want to sell beans until we get at least one more rain or until they see what the crop size is. So the old crop bean basis should remain pretty firm here for another couple of weeks.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
That is Greg Johnson. He is with the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.